All right, I'm your next speaker, and I'm Annette Wislacki from the University of Tennessee, and I'd also like to recognize my research associate, Jenny Moore, who did a lot of the actual field work for this project. We're going to talk about pepper production on biodegradable mulches in the southeast, and I'd like to thank Juan because he did a lot of the background work for me already, so we can rush through some of this and get to the results. But for those of us in the vegetable industry, we all know the benefits of plastic mulch, that weed control, reducing disease pressure, moisture retention, increased yield. And we also know some of the problems with plastic mulch, namely the disposal issues associated with it, both the labor for removal as well as what we do with it when we do lift it up. Do we stockpile it on the farm? Do we burn it, which is illegal in most states, but there's still a few where that's legal? And or do we take it to the landfill, which requires more labor and costs in depending on where you are for tipping fees and such. More recently, we've seen a lot of press about plastics in your oysters and clams and the nanoparticles that are getting into our food, and National Geographic just devoted a whole issue to the issue of plastics in the environment. So it is a big deal. So for these biodegradable plastic mulches, first of all, by definition, to be a biodegradable mulch, they must fully biodegrade into carbon dioxide, water, and microbial biomass. And they must have those similar benefits as polyethylene if they're going to be widely adopted. One of those is that they're able to be laid with a machine, which our growers wouldn't touch them if they had to lay them by hand. And then those other benefits that we already talked about. And then these, to be a sustainable alternative, we have to circumvent those disposal issues. And that includes that labor in pulling up the mulch at the end of the season. Lastly, we must cause no harm to the environment. So our project, located in Knoxville, we're looking at pepper production on these mulches, and we had 30-foot plots and 5 rows for each of these mulches, and they're 7 feet apart, which if you grow peppers, you're thinking, why on earth did they use 7 feet between the rows for peppers? But this is the third year of a 4-year project, and we grew pumpkins on these plots for the first 2 years, so we kept the spacing the same because we're tilling the mulches in exactly where they were before. And then we had 4 replicates per plot. We transplanted our peppers on May 25th, and we had a double staggered row that was 12 inches apart, and then the plants were 18 inches apart within the row. And then we harvested our peppers weekly from the end of July through the middle of September. And again, we could have kept going on harvest, but because this is the third year of a project and it has many moving parts, including a lot of soil measurements, our soil folks wanted to stay on their schedule that they'd been measuring the soil properties on, and so we ended the harvest in the middle of September, and we had 8 different treatments. And here you'll see the treatments in blue are the biodegradable plastic mulch treatments. So we had BioAgri, Nature Cycle, Organics, Ag, a black product, and then a white on black product that was also from Organics Ag. Then we had an experimental product, and it was PLA and PHA, and then we had a control of traditional polyethylene, as well as a bare ground control, and we had one biodegradable paper product, the WeedGuard Plus. So the data we took on these peppers was the mulch percent soil exposure, just like Juan talked about. It's a measure of visual degradation of the mulches, and we evaluated those twice a month. And then we also did weed counts in the plot. So we looked at 2 weeks after planting, and then in the middle of the season, and then in the late season. And we also looked at perennial sap nitrate at different growth stages. And then, of course, we did yield, marketable and total, and weights and numbers of those. And we did some quality parameters that didn't differ, so I'm not going to go into those today. So here you can see the percent soil exposure. And again, these mulches were laid at the end of May, and we started that percent soil exposure in early June. And you'll see that for about a little over a month, we didn't really see any percent soil exposure or degradation of those mulches. And then that WeedGuard Plus treatment started steadily rising, and by about the end of August, we had no visible remainder of that paper product in the field. The other mulches really varied. You see polyethylene there in yellow. So by the end of the season, We saw some rips and tears in that polyethylene, or about 10% of the soil that was exposed. And then you see the white on black was the next most intact product, so we had about 20% soil exposure. And then the organics and the bioagri were right around 50%. And then the experimental PLA and the nature cycle were a little more degraded than those. For the weed assessments, we looked at these over time, and I will say that just like with polyethylene, it's very important to know your weed community going in. The first 2 years of this project, we were looking at pumpkins. Our nuts edge wasn't really an issue because the plants would vine out and control it just with the pumpkin vines. With pepper, we've seen a very big uptake in that nuts edge. So you can see it here poking through the polyethylene. And interestingly enough, this is the Weed Guard Plus on the right, and that nuts edge can't penetrate through that paper product. So a lot of our growers, especially our smaller growers, are really interested in that product if they have a nuts edge issue. So here's the numbers for weeds per square meter. And you can see our first count was in the middle of June, and the bare ground treatment by far had the most weeds at that time. But as growers would do, we went back in and hand-weeded that plot on July 5th. And so in our next weed sampling, you can see that that had gone down to only 34 weeds per square meter. And there was no significant differences in that second sampling. But by the end, what you'll notice is that Weed Guard Plus only had 12 weeds per square meter, whereas the organics had over 84 weeds per square meter, and that's predominantly nuts edge. And the other treatments were in between there. For petiole sap nitrate readings, we took readings at first buds and first flower, and we didn't see any significant differences in those two samples. But when we get to the first sampling of when the fruit were half grown, we do start to see significant differences in the pepper sap nitrate. So you'll see that the lighter colored treatments, the bare ground and the weed guard and the white on black, had significantly lower nitrate readings than the black treatments. And the Weed Guard Plus at that time was the lowest treatment. And then for our first harvest, we didn't see any significant differences again. By the second harvest, you see that that white on black was our lowest treatment, and we still see a tendency for the Weed Guard Plus and the bare ground to be lower than other treatments. But we think that that white on black is the difference in the light reflection that we're seeing mainly. And with the bare ground and the Weed Guard Plus, it could be that water infiltration that's leaching more of our nutrients in those plots. This is the total marketable yield by harvest date in tons per acre. And again, we don't see a lot of significant differences here. On the August 10th harvest there, is the only one that was significantly different by treatment. And you'll notice that that white on black, that lighter color, had a much higher fruit load then, so which also could have contributed to those nitrate readings that we saw. So it had 4.32 tons per acre for that August 10th harvest, and shows the earliness of the crop on the white on black, which for our region we would expect because it cools the soil a little bit as well compared to the black. But you'll see by the end of the season we didn't have any significant differences among yield by treatment. The other thing we did was look at the total number of fruit. We also divided these out by size classes, and there were no significant differences by size class, so I'm just showing you the overall marketable numbers here. And you'll see that several of these treatments had comparable yields to the polyethylene, so it checks that box that we're getting equal yield to polyethylene. But you'll see that one of the treatments, the Nature Cycle, had a lower yield than the rest. For unmarketable, we also see some differences. We see that that white on black had the most unmarketable fruit per acre, though it was not significantly different from the polyethylene. There were other treatments like the bare ground that had fewer marketable fruit, as well as the Nature Cycle and the experimental product and the bioagri product as well, and organics. So our percent marketable yield varied from 8% in that bare ground plot to 20% in the white on black treatment. The reasons for unmarketable fruit, these were the most common reasons for unmarketability, were anthracnose and blossom end rot. And you'll notice that the polyethylene actually had the most anthracnose out of our treatments and significantly more anthracnose than the organics, the Nature Cycle, and the PLA, and the bare ground. And then for blossom end rot, we saw that the white on black had more blossom end rot than the other treatments. So in summary, we found that the transplants established more quickly on that white on black product and the paper in the bare ground, and likely this is due to the excessive heat we have at that time of year in Knoxville, but all treatments equalized later on, and we didn't see differences in plant growth or yield. The paper mulch was about 100% degraded by mid-August, and the polyethylene was the least degraded or had the least rips and tears in it by the end of the season, followed by that white-on-black product. And while that paper quickly degraded, it did give us, it prevented that emergence of nutsedge, and it also provides weed control during that critical weed period, or that first 4 to 6 weeks as the plants get established, and then shade out the mulch or the soil below it. The petiolsap nitrate was lower on the non-black mulch plots and at first flower and second harvest, and those lower seasonal total yields in the PLA and organics and nature cycle were mainly due to that nutsedge infestation that we had, and the white on black had the highest percent of unmarketable fruit. So I would like to thank all of the team that works on this project. This is an SCRI project, and we've been working with this team for about 10 years now, with Washington State and Montana State as well. And so it takes a village to study biodegradable mulch, and these are all the folks involved with that. And I'd be happy to take a question or two. And for more information, you can visit our website, which has a lot of good resources. We have videos and fact sheets, and our scientific journal articles are up there too. Here and then there. Go ahead. Yeah.
Can you go to number 11?
Number 11?
Yeah. The total yield part.
Yep.
Look at total yield. The lowest yield, the nature cycle, that's about 6.7 pounds per acre. And the highest one is bio agri, that's 15.
Yep.
That's 9 pounds per acre.
It is, but it wasn't significantly different. It's practically different if you're a grower, but there's a lot of variability by plot. Yeah, it is a big difference.
Did you have to change your plastic layer studies? It's more of a practical question for each type of mulch, particularly the paper.
So the question is, do we have to change our settings for each particular type of mulch? And that's the challenge of doing this sort of project, that we had 30 feet and then we'd change a roll and then we go 30 feet and change a roll. So the farm crew really did not like us after laying the mulches. But for most of these mulches, you want to get the tension off that machine as much as possible, especially the paper. So if you can get those wheels so they're holding it in place but not really giving it tension, it'll lay better. But it's a crepe product, so think about streamers at a birthday party, and it does have some give to it. So it lays pretty well. All right, let me see if I'm over on questions. Oh, I have one more minute. Suresh? I don't know why it would be higher on PE. It's a good question about why anthracnose would be higher on the polyethylene versus the other treatments. I don't have a good explanation for that because temperatures would be similar in all of the black mulches, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense as why that one would be higher than the others. All right, one more in the back. It was, and I think the white on black and the blossom end rot, I think a lot of that was probably that early picking when we tend to see more blossom end rot, and since that one was so much earlier, while the other treatments caught up, it wasn't. As far as the anthracnose goes, I don't really have a good explanation for the differences that would be on, since they're... Well, I think the bare ground did well because we weeded it, so it was cleaner, in some cases, and the nut sedge was really a severe infestation, so that could have played a role as well. Right, yeah, if we did the numbers for weeding, we might see some differences. All right, thank you. We're going to move on.